Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. President-elect Trump was elected back into the White House largely on the promise of mass deportations of non-citizens. Since being elected, there have been efforts to slowly walk back that position, try to soften it. But today, Trump made it clear he meant it when he confirmed that millions of migrants will be expelled. He confirmed once taking office, he will declare an illegal immigration a national emergency. And he would use broad powers to use the U.S. military to launch a sweeping mass deportation program, including workplace raids. The mass deportations would be inflammatory. It would rip apart the social fabric of many South Texas communities. Democrat State Senator Roland Gutierrez is also an immigration attorney, and he joins us to discuss what he sees the impact of these raids could be and who could be targeted. And Senator Roland Gutierrez, welcome back to The Source.
Thank you, David Martin. How are you?
Doing good. Tell me what your first reaction to hearing that Donald Trump confirming that he will declare illegal immigration a national emergency.
Well, I don't know fully what he means by that. I think that he thinks that by saying that he can, as you just said earlier in your intro, that he can bring in the U.S. military. There are many, many safeguards in our Constitution that keep the U.S. military from actually being involved and engaged in anything in the United States. And we've seen that over the years. I think that, sadly, you've got a guy that was just elected to office, and, you know, we can't deny that made a lot of promises, made a lot of suggestions to people about this one particular issue, all false in my mind. And obviously has found himself in a position where he has to seem to deliver on those things. It's my hope that there are plenty of safeguards within the system to be able to stop or slow down some of the things that he's talking about. From an economic perspective, it's a complete disaster. I mean, what he is suggesting will be a complete disaster to the United States economy. And I hope that people start to realize that. I've been talking about that quite a bit. Immigration is not our woes. You know, poor health care, poor education, poor transportation, poor infrastructure here in Texas. Certainly those are our woes. But, you know, a so-called broken immigration system, certainly things need to be done and fixed. But his ideas just don't hold water in my book.
Well, this is what Republican Representative Tony Gonzalez said about that yesterday when he was on ABC News. This is his comment.
You know, if we're going after the guy that's picking tomatoes or the nurse at the local hospital and we're not going after the convicted criminal, then our government has failed us. You know, our country was built on those fleeing persecution. And it would be just absolutely terrible if we don't protect those that are doing it the right way. Legal immigration should never be mixed with these hardened criminals. I did a lot of campaigning this season, went all over the country, and there's no doubt that Hispanic Americans overwhelmingly chose Republicans to govern. And so our message has to be one of positive if we want to hold on to these gains. If the message is we're here to deport your abuelita, that's not going to work well.
But we are hearing from Trump and his appointees, people he's announced, like Tom Homan. I mean, they are throw abuelita from el tren.
Yeah, listen, I mean, Tom Homan has said this on 60 Minutes, has said this before, and he's already, and so has Trump for that matter, suggested that there will be workforce raids. This is not a distinction. I mean, I appreciate what the congressman is suggesting, but this administration so far, this future administration, has not suggested anything other than a broad brush approach. We're getting rid of everybody. And certainly there are protections in our current legislation that keep that from happening. For example, 42B, cancellation of removal. I believe that if he were to do this, our courts would be tied up significantly. That's not to mention that just the sheer money that it would take to do this, to get this drive going on his part. We're talking about billions and billions and billions of dollars. And then thirdly, of course, there's the huge impact to our economy. You look at our farming industry, it is replete with legal immigrants working and illegal immigrants working in our fields. You look at the sea shift of any meat processing plant across this country. The food we eat every day, when we go home and we cook our chicken and we cook our ground beef, that is processed by someone. And those plants are open 24/7. I would argue that the sea shift is vastly replete with undocumented workers across the nation. So we have to be very real about what we're talking about. Donald Trump's broad brush approach to this is ludicrous, quite frankly. And if they have any measure of success one way in carrying this out, then we are a nation in trouble.
Well, he has also talked about using the Alien Enemies Act, which was used to do the Japanese internment camps that we had during World War II. Those laws are still on the books. The first step is declaring a national emergency and then deploying this act, this law, and short-circuiting any sort of due process.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we've seen this show happen before in the United States, and that was some 70 years ago, by the way. If this man certainly wants to take us back in time, well, this is one way to do it. Does he have enough people in Congress? He certainly has control of the House. He has control of the Senate. What will the United States Senate do? Will U.S. senators, Republican U.S. senators, break the filibuster? They probably will for this guy because he's going to demand it. And so if indeed he is able to do any aspect of this and maybe even rewrite immigration policy and get rid of certain protections that are put in place for people to get picked up by ICE, like I said before, I mean, we are in a significant world of hurt. But I think that people really and truly need to stop for a second and look at the severe economic ramifications about how their food is daily affected, the construction industry in South Texas, the restaurant industry across the United States. I mean, we really have to pay a little thought to this and not do what Donald Trump does all the time, which is shoot his mouth off and act irrationally. We saw that in the first year of 4 years. I think that we're going to start to see that on steroids, especially with the cabinet that he has picked that unfortunately is not going to push back in any way. The only thing that they know how to say is, yes, Mr. President.
So you think all of this is just for show for his base, the MAGA base, who have called for mass deportation?
Oh, I think it's for show, yes. But he's got the deck is stacked for him, not against him, for him, with the House of Representatives and the United States Senate and the Supreme Court. If he proceeds with it, and he is able to do any modicum of what he is suggesting, we will hurt economically. You won't have your landscaper anymore. You won't have your nanny anymore. You won't have the people that are out there doing your chores for you. You won't have any of the stuff that our immigrant laborers do. And by the way, those are jobs that Americans simply don't want to do. We know that.
All right. So when we come back from the break, I want to see if you've been hearing from people, since you're an immigration attorney, if you've been hearing from people what they're telling you, they're hearing this, if they're rattled by it. Also, if Trump does deploy the military on the border, do we still need Texas to have Operation Lone Star? What's the future of that? So let's take this break. Our phone lines are open. If you got questions or comments, do you want Trump to do this mass deportation and not just talk about it? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Donald Trump's administration's plan for mass deportation, its stated goal for removing the entire undocumented immigrant population from the United States. That's what he has promised to do. And this initiative would have extreme implications for South Texas, the communities, and the economy here, where we have a substantial percentage of residents who are immigrants or the children of immigrants. If you got questions or comments, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We're having a conversation with Texas State Senator Roland Gutierrez. He is also an immigration attorney, and he is on the front lines representing South Texas, the border, on these issues. And let's go to a caller, and let's go to Edward on the phones. And Edward, you're on the air.
Hey, gentlemen. I just wanted to push back, actually, on that last statement before the break.
Yeah.
And I'm going to start sounding like Senator Sanders here, but I call it a huge BS. Americans are willing to do any job you give them so long as you respect them and pay them well. The reason, that's why they're not doing those jobs. That's why illegals are occupying those jobs.
What happened to you? Go ahead, Edward.
I got to finish. Because we're tacitly looking the other way, they're being manipulated and abused by these employers. And we just want to look the other way? No.
Okay. Is that your thank you, Edward. We wanted to give you a chance. I didn't try to cut you off. Your phone was low in and out there. That's all. So to those comments, Senator Gutierrez.
Yeah, listen, I guess Edward is suggesting that we should pay people more. Absolutely. We have people in this country that in the state of Texas, where minimum wage is still $7.25 an hour. Imagine that. We have yet to be able to keep up with the rising costs of goods sold across this nation. And you see that day in and day out. But, you know, that's more a product of what corporate America is willing to do and supply and demand and many other issues. Insofar as every American willing to do these jobs, I don't know if Americans want to go process meat in a meat packing plant in the C shift. I certainly don't want my high school kid to do that. You know, I'm hoping that my kids have other aspirations, and that not that it's a demeaning job, it's a good job for sure. We should pay people more, but there's a reality to what I'm talking about here. Those very, very difficult jobs simply are not the American workforce. It's just simply not filling. And if that were true, then why do we have visas in the farming and agricultural industry open for these types of jobs? Not enough, by the way. The quotas, the annual quotas, are simply not enough. And that is why we have a broken immigration system. Edward's right in one sense. We do need to treat workers better. We need to pay them more.
But this has happened where, you know, farmers who couldn't find immigrants to come to the field work, they've put out ads, they raised the pay, they try to get people to come out there. And the ones who do, American citizens, they don't last an hour. I mean, this is work that is beyond anything that most of us have ever experienced.
Listen, we do H-2A visas in our office. And we get frustrated, like our clients get frustrated, because of the tremendous bureaucratic maze that you have to go through in trying to get the agricultural visa done, and as well as the seasonal worker visa, which is the H-2B. H-2Bs have caps. Agricultural visas don't have those caps. But just the notion of having your worker having to go back and forth every year makes it difficult for the American farm, the American ranch, to be able to do that. We do need to change our immigration policy in some ways. We do need to create our visa structure to be more open, more transparent, more simple, and be able to address the workforce that we need where Americans simply don't want to work. And we cannot deny and close our eyes to the fact that there are ample jobs that Americans simply don't want to do.
All right, let's go to Randall on the phones. And Randall, you're on the air.
Edward nailed it. Do you honestly think illegal immigrants, Mr. Gutierrez, hired under the table in the state of Texas are getting $7.25 an hour? Are you kidding me? Here's another reality. You, Mr. Gutierrez, and your fellow legislators look the other way year after year. The owners of those meatpacking plants aren't paying employment taxes on those C-shift workers. The employers are not making Social Security and Medicare contributions on those C-shift workers. They're not making minimum wage, of course. When are you guys going to reach down, find your fortitude, and put these employers behind bars where they belong?
Okay.
Hey,
Randall, thank you for the call. Appreciate the vigor.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look, we don't control the House or the Senate in Texas. Wish we did, because we would be able to go
All right. And
are they making 725 an hour? Probably more. Probably more, because it's still a supply and demand issue. You're still asking for workers. At the end of the day, those C-shift workers, you're not finding Americans to do the job. It's that simple. They're just not. And if we were, then we wouldn't have the problems that we're facing right now. But the fact is, all across this United States, in our meatpacking plants specifically, that C-shift is predominantly the predominant worker is a migrant worker that is absolutely being abused on some level, and at some level, certainly those corporations are not paying their due share. If we had control of the House and the Senate in Texas for the last 30 years, we have not, we'd make some drastic changes to that.
Well, a main point that was being made there is that the employers are the ones who are breaking the law by hiring undocumented workers. And so maybe that's where we should have enforcement.
Well, you saw that happen under the Bush administration. Bush started going after employers, and that quickly stopped. When the United States Chamber of Commerce and different industries started pushing back on George W. Bush's administration for doing worksite raids. And so, you know, appreciate the show that Trump wants to do, appreciate the show that George Bush did in the past. At some point, American business is going to stop and call King's X on this. Now, to all of those two callers that spoke up before, yes, absolutely. We need to be able to increase pay in those spaces, and we need to increase protections for American and U.S. and non-American workers. And we need to go after those corporations if we could. Those folks in Congress can do that. Those Republicans in Congress are going to be able to do that. They have no excuse now for not going after American industry that's hiring these people, because they have the House, they have the Senate, and they have the White House.
So we have had undocumented migrants working in the United States, basically subsidizing our food. You know, I don't want to pay $10, $12 for a head of lettuce or a couple of bucks for an apple. You know, everything is being subsidized because the labor part of it is so low. If we fix that, and now we're paying people a lot more to do that work, to haul in, to do that really hard labor, now food is going to cost a lot more. We saw what happened in this last election, where people were basically voting because the price of eggs had gone up a little bit. What happens when you got to pay so much more for a head of lettuce?
Listen, I mean, we've been watching prices. I think that this president, Joe Biden, has done tremendous work on the economy. We all were expecting. I know that Donald Trump, when he left office, was talking about how Biden was going to send us into a recession. We've done tremendous work righting the wrongs of where that economy was headed through the Inflation Reduction Act, through the infrastructure bill, and so many other things, through, cutting the cost of certain medications and so on. We've got to be able to do better in this space. But where we didn't communicate well was really how the cost of goods sold wasn't keeping up with wages. And in certain states like Texas, when you are paid so low, you have that problem that you just, you know, you can't afford the cost of things that are happening. I mean, if you look at insurance premiums right now, if you have a $300 a month payment on your car and you're making that payment, but you have to get full coverage, that insurance is likely to be around $200, $250. How are people able to make it? That is something that needs to be addressed. The cost of groceries right now is through the roof. Lemons and limes right now are four for a dollar. 3 years ago, they were 10 for a dollar. It's going to get worse when you do this. It's absolutely going to get worse when you do this, to your point.
But when you have people who want to do the work, they want that payment for, you know, minimum wage or what have you, or for, you know, piecework that they would get by filling a peach basket of produce and being paid along the way. And that's what they want. We have people who are actually risking their lives to come to the country to do that work. you know, there is something not wrong in this. There's something wrong with this equation. People want to do that work. They want to get that payment. And yet we're trying to turn them away. And now we have people objecting to the fact that this whole thing exists. But they're enjoying, you know, pardon the pun, the fruits of the labor.
Well, let's also be very clear. Under the current law, under, for instance, an H-2A visa, an agricultural visa, it's not minimum wage that you have to pay. You have to pay the prevailing wage for that kind of job in that community. So that could be $12 in Texas. It could be $15 in California. It could be $17 in Florida. That's by way of example. Okay, and all that is driven through the Department of Labor and their statistics. So that means that in those communities, the prevailing wage, whether it's 12, 15, or 17, that we cannot find workers to go pick strawberries in Poteet, Texas at that prevailing wage, not minimum wage. And so we can't find American workers to do that. So we have to get outside labor, and that outside labor will work for those $12 an hour in Texas. And so we have to be attuned to the fact that there are so many areas that Americans simply don't want to work. And I think that we all want more for our children, right? We don't want our kids, you know, picking strawberries. We want our kids. I mean, that might be nice for a good summer job just to teach them a lesson, but I want my kid to be a rocket scientist or an actor or a doctor or whatever they want to be.
So here we are, though, with, you know, now we're going to expel that labor that would have been doing that work. What does that leave us? I mean, with higher prices or food rotting in the fields?
Well, according to your last two workers, we'll be just fine because Americans will, your last two callers, rather, will be just fine because Americans will go off their jobs or they'll leave their houses if they're unemployed, and they'll go out and pick the strawberries and pick the fruit. I think that you and I know that that's just BS and that's not going to happen. And so I think you're going to certainly have food rotting in the fields if he were to be able to go along with this thing the whole way through. And certainly we would have the cost of goods sold skyrocketing.
But also you're saying that Trump isn't really going to follow through on this plan.
No, I didn't say that. I think there is a lot of bluster to this thing. I think at some point business leaders across this country push back if there is some semblance of it. I think that if he does any semblance of it, it is detrimental to our economy. Even 10% of what he's saying is detrimental to the economy. I think part of the show is certainly that he's going to send troops to the border. That probably needs to happen on some level. I don't know about sending, active duty troops. I don't know how you go about doing that. The real simple thing is just have more money, like in this last bipartisan bill that, you know, he essentially killed from the bleachers. There was more money for officers along the border. We absolutely need billions more money for officers along the border. Absolutely need more money for judges. If you do all of those things and you put those things in place, I think you'll stop some of the flow of the migrants that are coming from particularly Venezuela. You still see a lot of that happening because our country is so in flux.
Right. It's a disaster. A flux of disaster. So, but when I come back, so we'll talk more. I want to get to that Operation Lone Star issue. Texas is paying billions and billions of dollars for. And if Trump follows through on his promises to seal the southern border by using the U.S. military, that's what he campaigned on, then why do we need Operation Lone Star? Would we be able to at least recoup some of those billions of dollars in the next legislative session? So, and our phone lines are open. If you've got a question or a comment for Texas Senator Roland Gutierrez about immigration, about border security, also about how to rebuild the Texas Democratic Party, what happened to the Latino vote, 833-877-8255. The source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're having a conversation today with Texas State Senator Roland Gutierrez. He's also an immigration attorney. They're going into a new legislative session in January. He was a candidate for the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senator to take on Ted Cruz. However, that went to Representative Colin Allred. He became the nominee. What happened there? We know now that Ted Cruz was reelected, and we're also going to be talking about rebuilding the Democratic Party in Texas, given this past election did not go well for that party. And you can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we are keying off on the big news today that President-elect Donald Trump says that he will declare immigration a national emergency, granting himself broad powers in order to deploy the military for mass deportations. Let's go to Michael on the phones. And Michael, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. And Representative Gutierrez, thank you so much for the work that you've done. My question involves a comprehensive immigration reform. What happened to that idea? It seemed like President Bush came up with that idea, and then the Republicans pushed back, and I think Obama tried it, and then it got pushed back again. Why has that not happened, and what are the prospects that we could have comprehensive immigration reform?
Michael, thank you for the call. And Senator Gutierrez.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an excellent question, Michael. And certainly we saw that from George W. Bush. Even though he's trying to deport a whole bunch of people, he said we need to have immigration reform. We saw Obama deport more people than anybody else, but he tried to have a bipartisan comprehensive immigration reform plan that actually was very, very close. Unfortunately, couldn't get through the United States Senate. I don't even think it was pitched at that time. When he had both the House and the Senate, he proceeded, as we all know, with the Health Care Act. And so we have to have a long-term discussion on this. I mean, it's not something to say, I'm going to deport everybody just to make your political ends meet. It doesn't make sense to do that. It doesn't, not at all. We've got to be able to fix our visa system. H-2As are broken. H-2Bs are broken. Certain professionals. We train the best and brightest in the world under our student visas. And then we tell that engineer that got his doctorate or his master's here, we tell him or her, okay, you're done. It's time to go home. And they send him back to China or India, when we should be able to encourage that worker to stay here. We need doctors in rural Texas. We have a J-1 program for that, but it has many, many limitations. We need to expand the J-1 program so that we can have doctors in rural Texas. We need to take the migrants that have been here for 20 years, by God, take their children that have DACA status right now, some of them, and give them a pathway to residency. People that have been here for 20 years should have a pathway to residency. And listen, you know, voting, I'm sure, at some point, but we're willing to hold off on that. We've got to be able to do something. Now, if Donald Trump were to go in and say, look, we're going to take people and deport them for the ones that have been here for the last 2 and 3 years. And well, that's certainly an argument to be made, but he hasn't said that. What he's saying is, I'm deporting everyone. You have to be able to look at the facts on the ground and look at a guy that's been here for 20 years that wasn't able to get under Ronald Reagan's amnesty plan, who's been contributing to the economy, who's got U.S. citizen kids, perhaps a U.S. citizen wife or husband. And we've got to be able to say, what do we do for these people?
Well,
let's see what happens.
So polling, I don't know how much we can believe in polling anymore, but polling shows that over 50% of Americans support mass deportations, about 55%. But when you frame the question differently about what should we do about Dreamers and DACA, 80% basically say we should provide a pathway to citizenship for them. Also, when we asked the similar question, what about people who have been here illegally for 20 years? They've never broken the law. They've paid their taxes. Should there be a pathway to citizenship for them? And it's like 75% of Americans say, yes, we should provide that. It's really about how we ask the question, and we get a variety of answers because people seem to be kind of blanking out when we talk about the nuance of these factors. And when people who have worked so hard, they've done the right thing, they want to be good Americans, politics gets in the way, Senator.
No, absolutely. I mean, listen, I mean, we've got a very complicated issue here that shouldn't be addressed in a very blanketed, broad brush fashion like Donald Trump wants to address it. He could go out and be magnanimous here and say, look, I'm going to take everybody that's arrived in the last 2 or 3 years And if that's his thing and he wants to say that, then I can see an argument for that. Whether I agree doesn't matter. But this notion that he's saying, I'm deporting all immigrants because they're all responsible for the crime in the United States and this and that and the other, we've all heard the speech. That's just nonsense. Because what you're going to do is upend the United States economy and you're going to put it in turmoil. That's the reality. And so we'll see what kind of show this is going to be, if it's going to be real, if it's not. We're going to know that here pretty early, and we're going to see how things play out.
Let's go to Andrea on the phones. Andrea, you're on the air.
Hi. My parents immigrated here from Chile, so I am all for immigration. But my concern is being clear on when we talk about deportation. Is it people that already have their H-1, H-2 visas that are working and legitimately have a visa? I don't think that that's what they're talking about. I think we're talking about people that are crossing the border, especially in Texas. I live in San Antonio, by the masses and draining our resources. And that's where I think most of us have the issue. I'm all for deportation. I mean, for immigration, but we need to have some kind of system that doesn't allow just anybody that comes through our border to come through, because they do cause some issues, not all of them. But on the other hand, if you look at any other country in the world, we cannot just step in there and go do or find a job or start working, buy a house and do it. So I'm all for helping people, but we have to have some kind of standard. And that's where I believe, and I hope that all of our politicians, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, will do that.
Andrea, thank you for your call. We appreciate that. And Senator Gutierrez?
Yeah, I'm not so sure what the question is, but I'll tell you that San Antonio and this country is replete with migrants that have been here for 20 years that didn't come in on an H-1 or an H-2B. So they've either came in on a tourist visa and overstayed, or they crossed the river illegally and they've been here. Maybe Andrea knows a few of them. I know a lot of them, of people that are great, wonderful people that have their children in our public schools, that are working tremendously well, that are contributing to our economy in a real way, that are paying taxes because they got an I-10 number and they want to be able to do that properly. I mean, it's all about how you define it all. I mean, so she said it's okay if you came in on an H-2A or an H-2B. Yeah, the vast majority, we have 13 million undocumented that have been here for 20 years in this country. That's the truth. 13 million undocumented that have been here for 20 years that we have abused, that we've utilized, and that we have allowed corporations, to that other caller's point, to abuse the system entirely and not be able to do the right thing for people that are working and want to live up to the promise of living in America, to being part of this in jobs that most of the time Americans don't want to do. So, you know, people can call BS so that all they want. At the end of the day, go look at the gardener around the corner. Go look at the kid that's working at the Taco Bell in the back, you know, cooking the food. Just open your eyes a little bit. You'll see more undocumented than you think that have been here for a tremendously long period of time. Do we have to do something about what has happened primarily with Venezuelans over the last few years? Certainly, we need to address it. We need to go look at our amnesty protocols as well, or asylum protocols, rather. And see how we're going to address that in a better way. But this is also a problem. I disagree with her in this sense. This is a problem that every first world country is experiencing. You go to Europe, the migrants are from Africa, and they're out there in the back of the kitchens, and they're working, and they're doing their part. And so this is a world problem. Donald Trump treats this as if some broad brush issue that with a stroke of a pen he's going to be able to resolve. And the fact is, if the solutions are what he tells us they're going to be, we are going to be an economic nightmare.
I'm not really clear what's meant when we hear, as the caller brought up, that they're taking so many resources. When we hear that they are paying taxes, we had a caller who was complaining that these people working in meatpacking plants weren't paying Social Security, or they're never going to collect Social Security, but they might be paying into Social Security. We know that there's a lot of taxes that are paid by migrant labor, and they're never able to actually collect with the benefits of those programs. So that's kind of one of those facts that's not doesn't really hold up.
There's a whole federal fund. There's a whole federal fund that's just sitting there with taxes that have been paid by people on returns that cannot be made because they're I-10 numbers or their false Social Security numbers, so that those people can get a job. And those employers turn a blind eye to that, by the way, until they get a no match letter, and then they'll go tell Juan or Jose or Maria, hey, you've got to go. And so at which time they won't have a problem when Juan or Maria or Jose come back with another Social Security number. I mean, what's going on in this space is more complex than what people realize, and it's far more complex than what Donald Trump tells you it is.
And the fallout will be severe. Let's take another break. Our phone lines are open. Jennifer, I will get you on the air when we come back. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR. Having a conversation with State Senator Roland Gutierrez talking about immigration reform, mass deportations, when border security. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. State Senator Roland Gutierrez is here to take your calls, 833-877-8255, talking about immigration reform, mass deportations, border security. So, Senator Gutierrez, what's going to happen with Operation Lone Star? It's a program that spends billions and billions of dollars from the Texas coffers. Are we going to need that going into Trump calls Operation Aurora, his border security plan?
Well, listen, I mean, well, that remains to be seen as to what happens going forward. But I've been working or volunteering my time in the Texas legislature for 20 years, and time again, when we have a Democratic president, I've seen every Republican legislator send off some demand letter to the federal government to pay us back for the money that has been spent in Operation Lone Star and its predecessors. And so I urge those same Republicans to send Trump a letter saying, hey, why don't you go send us back the $20 billion that these Republicans have poorly spent. And I say poorly spent because we've gotten no real metrics one way or another on whether these things are working well. To hear Greg Abbott tell it, he solved the problem. And so, therefore, why do we need a bunch of federal officers on the border? Fact is, it is a problem that is still going on. It's a problem that does need to be addressed in the right way. It's a problem that Congress had a bill to fix it that most Americans across the country agreed with. But yet Donald Trump from the bleachers told Mike Johnson and others to put the brakes on it until I get in there. And so let's see what happens. I mean, whether it's this so-called Operation Aurora or just a bipartisan or a bill that puts more officers on the ground.
But how would Abbott justify Operation Lone Star? Because he did the whole thing, is his kabuki theater of Operation Lone Star was about trying to just make Biden look bad. Now Biden's no longer there. We got Trump in the office, so why are you going to continue to do it? And these billions and billions of dollars could be used for health care. They could be used for public education. They could be used for all sorts of infrastructure needs.
No, absolutely. I mean, listen, we've got a broken grid in Texas. We have an education system they've controlled for 30 years now that's in the gutter. We're 46 in spending and 46 in performance because those things correlate. We've got to stop the spending on Operation Lone Star. I've been calling that for years. And we've got to create some real change here as we move forward.
All right, let's go to Jennifer on the phones. And Jennifer, you're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. Senator, what I'm really interested in is the state of our Democratic Party in Texas right now. I'm a 50-year-old Hispanic in San Antonio, and I'm part of a small grassroots group that has come together post-election. And my group, along like others that we're hearing on Facebook groups, we're really interested on what we need to do to make changes, make positive changes. I know everybody's still culling through the information, the polls, the results, you know, Hispanic men and women, white women, all of that information still has to be hashed through, and I get it. But right now, what can we do here in San Antonio and other communities to help make sure that we're listening to the results of what people are saying, the messaging? You know, we're doing postcards and they've got Joe Rogan, those kind of things. I'm really interested. How do we pick up from today, and how do we make positive changes? What can I do? Basically, that's what I want to know. What can I do that I can go back and tell my grassroots group?
All right. Thank you for the call, Jennifer.
Well, that's a great question. If I knew the answer to it, I'd be a very rich man, I guess. But the fact is, there's a lot of things that they've done well that we haven't in Texas. You know, you joked that they're doing Joe Rogan and we're doing postcards. The fact is, we're really not doing postcards anymore as much as we used to. If you look at the mail campaign that Ted Cruz did to senior citizens' mail, and you look at the comparable side by Allred, who had about as much money or more, they didn't do that much mail anymore. And the studies are still show that Latinos still like that mail out that they get in their mail. And that just didn't happen from our side, not to pick on Allred, but for many campaigns in that regard. I do think that Latinos need to be talked to in a different way. I mean, I will always and forever fight for a woman's right to choose. I will always talk about that. But we do, when we get hit on the economy, we can't just say, hey, the economy is great. We've got to be able to look at kitchen table politics. People are hurting at home. If you go to the grocery store and you look at what it costs to buy groceries, you look at a working class family, the average working class family of four in Texas, makes $48,000 a year. And yet their grocery bill is about $400 a week. Mostly on processed foods, by the way. So imagine how you make that happen in America now. We are not addressing the economic needs. It's not enough to say, hey, the economy is great and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act, and we can't say we did all the Inflation Reduction Act. We've got to break it down a little bit for people at home a little bit more. To quote James Carville, it is the economy. He said something else after that. There was a nice adjective. That, but it is the economy, and you constantly need to be able to talk to people about how that's important and how they've been screwed over by 30, 40 years of Republican policy, including price gouging. We heard the vice president say that during her campaign, but we needed to hear more from other candidates down the road. We can't just pin our hopes on one or two issues. We've got to communicate effectively, communicate with people on the things that are hurting them the most. Right now in this session, I'm going to be talking about auto insurance. I'm going to be talking about health insurance. And certainly, we're always going to push back for women's rights, reproductive rights. We're always going to try to keep – we're going to tell the truth on what's happening in our broken education system in the state. I mean, Texas is a mess, and these people have controlled this mess for 30 years, and yet people keep voting for them. And that just goes to show that these people have been successful at one thing, and that's dumbing down education in Texas and dumbing down everybody's ability to be able to question to what's going on in their daily lives.
Well, the chairperson for the Texas Democratic Party, Gilberto Hinojosa, he resigned after the results of this last election. Carol Robinson, who was the Houston Democrat who challenged Hinojosa in 2022 for the party chairmanship, she has said that we need an actual statewide organization, not just an office in Austin. Is there a real, actual statewide organization for the Texas Democratic Party?
Well, I will say that the Republicans did make some inroads in Hispanic communities by putting localized offices, state offices, in South Texas, where they were talking to people. They started doing what Democrats have done for many, many years. It's, how can we help you? What do you need at home? And if we don't look at things that way and look at a more macro level on what we need to do and micro level on what we need to do, we've got to be able to have regional offices throughout the state. We do not have that. Everything is run out of Austin. And, you know, the response by Gilbert or others will be, well, we've got the county parties. To some extent, that's true. But when you're looking at rural Texas, if you look at Republican policy in this state over the last 30 years, the people that have been hurt the most are rural Texans, mostly Republicans.
they have been hurt the most by the people that they vote for the most. And no one's talking to them about that. No one's telling them about that. We keep getting killed by these rural counties, and on the hope that our urban counties are going to outweigh that rural tidal wave that comes on Election Day.
It's not working.
It's not working because we don't do anything in our power to try to communicate with rural voters.
And I'm going to try and get in one last caller here if I can, because Valerie's been waiting for a while. And Valerie, you're on the air.
Hi. My question is in regards to comments that the incoming border czar has made. There was a lot of backlash during the Trump administration when he was separating families at the border. And my understanding is that the new plan is to go ahead and deport entire families, whether or not the children are American citizens or not. And I just kind of wanted to know, like, do you see that happening? Parents being deported with their American children, U.S. citizen children? And are we talking about 16, 17-year-old kids? Like, is that actually something that could happen to U.S. citizen children?
All right. Thank you, Valerie. So birthright citizenship definitely is in the crosshairs. They have a legal argument saying that if your parents are undocumented, then they could do away with that. But Senator Gutierrez.
Birthright citizenship is going to be okay. But the fact is, are we going to be separating families? I think that what's happening under this Trump administration is we don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. I only know what they say they're going to do. And what they say they're going to do should scare the hell out of all of us. If you look at the people that he has appointed in his cabinet over the last 6 days, 7 days, 10 days, we should all be very afraid because there's not a thoughtful one of them in the bunch. There's nobody that's going to push back. The first time when he ran and he appointed his cabinet, I saw him appoint all of the, you know, a few generals, a lot of business types, some big entrepreneurs. And in the end, those people pushed back. Now the people he's appointing are nothing but yes men and women that are going to tell this guy and let this guy do whatever the hell he wants. We have to stay vigilant. We have to keep moving forward. We have to keep talking about injustices when we see it. You know, I get that it's not election time anymore, but this man's going to give us a lot to talk about and sadly a lot to worry about. We should just be able to cut through all the crap and do the best we can to try to get through these next 4 years.
Roland Gutierrez, he is a state senator. He's representing San Antonio and parts of West Texas along the Texas-Mexico border. He is also an immigration attorney. He was a candidate for the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senator, but that went to Colin Allred, who lost to Ted Cruz. And thank you so much for talking to us today, Senator Gutierrez.
Thank you, David. Appreciate the time.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
Has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.